Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 129, recorded January 9th, 2012. You must be this dope to enter. This Week in Google is brought to you by Carbonite Online Backup, automatic, continuous, unlimited backup for your computer files, only $59 a year. Try it free at carbonite.com, and don't forget to use the offer code TWIG to get two bonus months with purchase. It's time for TWIG, This Week in Google, our pre-CES show. Leo Laporte here, and joining us right now, Jeff Jarvis, from his office at home in New York. Good to have you, Jeff.
Good to be here.
Jeff is the author.
On Monday.
Yeah, we removed the day, and I'll explain that in a second. He's the author of Public Parts, brand new book from Simon & Schuster, How Sharing in the Digital Age Improves the Way We Work and Live. And this was a book that he's been writing as we've been doing the show, so we got a lot of insight into this. And it's fantastic about public, life in public, and the new
Thank
publicness
you,
and so forth. Thank you for being here, Jeff. Gina is not here. She's at the White House.
Yes.
She's at the White House.
All hail Gina.
Yeah. She asked us not to talk about why she's there, but I think when she comes back next week, she'll explain it.
Yeah.
She'll explain it.
But I'm going to vote for her for vice president.
Shh. You weren't supposed to say anything. Kevin Purdy is here in her place. We're so glad to have the Purd man.
Hello.
Hey, Kevin. Good to have you. He's Kevin Purdy on Twitter, the Purd man on the internet.
And author of Google Plus, The Missing Manual, which I don't have a copy of.
Oh, that's right. Google Plus, The Missing Manual.
Yes. Just outbound from O'Reilly. You can find it at O'Reilly.com. Search it out there or on Amazon. And out in print and ebook form very soon, but printed over the holidays, so I don't have my copy yet.
How exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Also an Android wizard.
Yeah.
And follow him on Google Plus.
Indeed.
I just added you to my... I should add you to celebrities.
Add me to a circle, which you won't tell me the name of.
I know. I have a lot of circles here. What? I could put you in Microsoft groupies? No. Mavens? No. Photographers? No. Podcasters? No. I think tech journalists. Hey. You'll join an elite crew of 716 people. I like this feature, which we never talked about on Google Plus, of the sliders in the circles now.
Yeah, you talked about it previously.
Did we?
Yeah, we did briefly because none of us had it yet.
Like it.
Showing up for some people. Like, it's rolling out like everything in Google Land. I like it too.
So I'm looking now in my circles. Where do I get? How do I find it?
Oh,
do I click a circle and then it will be in the circle or no?
Actually, it's on the stream page, I believe.
It's on the main page. Oh, that's right. I remember now. Here's what you do. You click, like, say, acquaintances. I'm going to click one of my circles and go there.
Right.
And then I will get a slider on the page of that particular circle.
It's in the top right corner of your stream, and you can slide it to determine how much of that circle shows up in your mainstream.
I wish it had more granularity because you really only have four positions. You have show...
It says most for all of them, and everybody's in my circles because I want to see most of what they say already.
Right. Most is most the default if I have not done this before.
Yes.
So everything is most. As usual, Google is not exactly transparent about its algorithms here.
What it also reveals to us is that we're not seeing a lot of things in the stream of our people's. So there's no presumption that I've seen everything that you've had to say.
Right. I went to family and turned that up all the way because I always want to see anything my family posts. Same thing with the people I work with. And then I turned down some groups. Like photographers, there's so many photographers on Twitter. And it was becoming like a photo blog. And I love them, but I don't want to see as much. So it's nice that you can kind of fine-tune it.
And previously, you could create like a circle. And, you know, as I was just joking about, nobody could see what you named a circle. So you could create a circle called like frenemies or something.
Right.
Or
dorks.
People I actually hate. But they'd show up in your mainstream. And you'd say, what's the point of the service? But, yeah, that's... really neat new feature that I need to add to a revision of my book.
Well, there's one feature that I would really like to have, and maybe Google will listen to us someday, which is the ability to I guess they have added that in effect with this slider. So I could say what I'd like is to have some custom streams like this plus this plus this. But that might be too complicated to implement.
You could manually do it, but yeah, to remix your stream so you just see like friends and photographers.
Yeah, like let me shift click or command click on the stream and say I want to see this, this, and this, and make a kind of a meta circle that includes those circles or something like
and,
that.
And right. To share that. I mean, Vic Kondotra plussed this weekend about people being able to go to the starter page, and thank goodness we're listed there. And, you know, get circles. But I think the more powerful thing is not to have one size fits all circles, but to have each of us have our own circles that you can subscribe to and we keep updated, and may the best circles win. And that's really where the power, it's going to give Google more data on, you know, who's authoritative and who's good and who's recommended more by more people.
Right. Right. What is this? How do I see the starter page?
Oh, let's
see. If I've already signed up, I guess I can't.
Look, no, you can. Yes, you can. Look up Vic.
You can get to it. Yeah. All right. I remember.
If you look up Vic's posts, let me see. I'll bet that it's not too far down. If you skip the dog caught in the balloons.
Funny video of a beautiful baby lab running around the house getting tangled up in balloons.
Skip. Okay. If you go down about 4 feet, skip the bungee jumping video, which I hate because I hate
heights. Oh, my God. You know what?
I cannot stand
that. Folks, I've been telling you for years, don't bungee jump. And this video confirms it. What if the cord broke? She survived.
Crocodiles. Go down below her, where you see this is a great place to find
interesting. Right. Just click here, plus.google.com/get started.
Here's the weird thing. I thought I was off the list. Turns out that it won't recommend you to yourself.
Oh.
So if you look, you won't find yourself on the list.
So which list are you in, Jeff Jarvis?
Well, I believe they got it mixed up. I'm in tech and Gina's in news. They can should be the opposite. But yeah. I'll take what I can get.
This is cool.
Yeah, I follow both of you guys, so I don't see either of you.
So, and I can add all these people.
Yeah, you can just add a circle there.
Oh, that's nice.
I didn't realize that's what it was. It wasn't just a recommended list. You can now subscribe to a whole circle.
Oh, cool. So I'm going to add a technology circle. I'm going to add a politics circle, a photography and art circle. That's nice. This is their version of the Twitter suggested users list, but implemented, I think, in a little more benign way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the reason both Twitter and Google Plus do this is when you're new to a place like this, you often say, well, you know, I don't see anything. What should I do now?
The big problem is that you come. I know people who come in. I'm sure you've heard it too. Come in and say, well, what's with this Google Plus thing? All I hear is crickets. It's boring.
Yeah,
and they've got to have starter kits.
Right. Now, do you guys yet have the new Google bar? Because how long ago was it we talked about this? And I still have that big black bar at the top.
So do I.
Manually enabled it. There's a
hack. But
there's
I don't
a cookie
like to,
trick you can do.
I don't like to do that because I kind of want the real world experience, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very slowly rolling out.
Very slowly. Surprisingly slowly.
Adam Pasha.
Almost as slowly as Timeline.
Yeah, a lot of folks don't have it yet.
Timeline is now out, right? The Facebook Timeline.
Still being phased in.
Mm-hmm. That one is I implemented with the developer trick because I really wanted to play with the timeline. I love it. You know what's really interesting now? Because of subscriptions, that completely, at least for people who enabled subscriptions, changes the experience of Facebook entirely. So my experience of Facebook, because I allow you, if you go to my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/LeoGLaporte, because somebody else has Leo Laporte, you can subscribe, which means a asymmetric follow, just like a Twitter style or Google Plus style follow, where I don't have to approve you or anything. But what that means is everybody who subscribed to me now suddenly is seeing my post and commenting on them. And
right.
I have 33,000 people subscribing to me, commenting on my post. That means almost everything I post, there's dozens of comments. And then people bitch because I don't read the comments.
So have you noticed the kind of more prominent, you know, public/friends/close friends switcher then on the right side of the post? Or is that still not like?
Well, I do everything public, right? Because like Jeff, okay. I live in public. But one thing I do notice, while there's a lot of engagement on Facebook, and please forgive me if you're one of these people, there's a lot of dumb engagement on Facebook. People who just say things because they want to say things. You know, comments like, I put a picture of Frost on my car, which is a stupid post, but I did it anyway. And somebody posted dandruff. Then Patrick said, slow day, huh? And then somebody said, is that a euphemism? And then here's a great comment. What? W-A-T. So Jeff, you live in public. Doesn't the public sometimes get on your nerves?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does. The public is, what I often say about this is that the internet is just life. Life is filled with bozos. Ergo, the internet is filled with bozos.
It is life.
And it is life. And you can avoid them. Let me ask you this. When you have a reflex to post something, what's your order? Twitter, Facebook, Google+.
Can I tell you what I've been doing lately, which is bad. I break all the rules because I agree this is a rule. You should post natively. So when you're posting on Twitter, you should be on Twitter posting on Twitter. When posting on Facebook, you should be on Facebook. I don't do that because that's too difficult. And as Facebook and Twitter and Google+ kind of seem to merge in terms of what they're all becoming, for me, broadcast media. So I use a cross-post tool called Publish Sync on Google+. When I post on Google+, I check Twitter and Facebook in most cases. But even more what I'm using, and I know this is shocking, is Path. So Path is intended to be a private stream. You only have 150 friends at max. You're only supposed to friend people you know. My friend Alex Lindsay says, I only friend people on Path that I would want at a dinner party. It's kind of like a dinner party. And then you post stuff privately. But Path has subtly at the bottom little boxes for Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Foursquare. And most of the time now, if you see a tweet from me, or especially if there's a picture associated, or a Facebook posting, most of my Facebook postings, they come from Path.
Hmm.
Is that bad? Is that wrong?
I've friends of mine who work in marketing and that field say that you actually kind of get penalized for doing that on Facebook.
You do.
In terms of...
Yes,
okay,
you do.
That's a definite thing?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Facebook, and again, Facebook also is a little opaque about their algorithms for rising stuff up through the news stream. But it's absolutely true if you're not natively posting... that they will degrade you. But on the other hand, if you're following me and you go to my timeline, everything's there, right?
But Jeff's question then was there anything in particular that makes you want to post a certain thing to one type of
network? How about you, Kevin?
Anything that's ephemeral goes to Twitter. Like, hey, this bagel's terrible. That goes to Twitter. Anything that's... Usually, I think things that do best with a link go to Google+ for me. When I want to like center a conversation around something, if I want to say this photo, this link, this thing, this video, that's Google+ seems to be the place for me where I get the most benevolent, good feedback on that type of thing. When you can actually point at something as opposed to just saying really warm in Buffalo in the winter. And Facebook is, I only use it as friends and family. That is where I go to post things about my, you know, life from folks who know me from the meat sphere.
Yeah, I think first of all, it's a moving target, right? I mean, there's no rule. And Facebook has completely changed from being my friends and high school classmates to anybody now. So I don't know how Facebook or Google+ or Twitter differ very much. The engagement might differ.
And now Facebook's... status limit is so much longer now. It's like Google+. You can post a whole blog post on there if you wanted to.
It's many people. I think it's their blog.
Yeah.
You know, you used to have to use a note. Now you just put in status. It's their blog.
You know, one thing I'll say is that, and this is partly because I've abused my blog while I was writing the book. I blogged about the book, but I blogged less as a whole, and I still haven't picked up my pace because I'm just writing at a different pace. Mm-hmm. But the quality of conversation on the blog, down. I agree with Kevin. When I want a conversation, I put it on Google+ now. I might put it on the blog for the record, but I have basically a few people who don't like me coming in there and reminding me how much they don't like me. And
The trolls are everywhere. Now, I'm seeing more and more people, M.G. Siegler just did this, turning off comments on their blogs because I thought his post was kind of interesting. He said, you know, it's not my job to give you a bully pulpit. If you have something to say, get yourself a blog or a Twitter account or a Facebook. Yeah. I still have comments on my blog. I think comments are great, but I have to say that especially for somebody who is a lightning rod like MG is, comments really just deteriorate very quickly.
Yeah, you know, I used to defend comments because it was the means of having a conversation online. Online's about conversations and, you know, power to the people and all that. But there's nothing requiring us to get noise. And, you know, I just had an exchange just now on email with a flack who sent me something, and I just put on unsubscribe coming back, and she yelled at me for that. That was rude. I said, well, it was rude for you to send me something I didn't ask for.
Right.
I love it when I freeze in an unhappy position.
As you have.
As I you have. Do look like you're receiving email you don't want right now, so.
Or something else I don't want. Somewhere else I don't want it, yes. I'm sorry. I'm so distracted.
It's a little distracting, isn't it?
Help, unfreeze me.
There he goes.
There we go. So I was writing a post. I haven't put it up yet. I was about to put it up about email. And Bob Wyman, the brilliant Bob Wyman, founder of PubSub and other things, who's now at Google, sat me down one day and explained that the real problem with mail is that it's sender-controlled, not recipient-controlled.
Oh, yeah.
And he's absolutely right. And when you think that through, that's the whole problem. And that's what changed everything. And Google Plus, as I think we might have discussed in the show before, is almost all recipient controlled. Mm-hmm. You see the stuff that you have agreed to get. And if it's not recipient controlled, it becomes spam. So that's why they used to be able to send us notifications. Anybody could. That became spam. So now we all turn off notifications for anyone we don't follow.
Right.
It does limit the serendipity a bit, but it gets rid of that. Comments are still spam worthy because somebody we don't know can put something in there, but we have more controls to kill that. So whenever the recipient loses control, it becomes noise. And that presents
just like phone calls. That's why we hate telemarketing.
Right. And that's why you know, what gave us more control? Well, to an extent, the voicemail did, but then the obligation fell to us to return the call. To an extent, ID did, but then there's fights about that. And so we, you know, we fight around this so much.
It just seems somehow wrong to post and not engage in conversation about the post. That's the ultimate in broadcasting, right? And I thought we were moving beyond broadcasting to conversation, but maybe not.
But it gets ruined. It gets ruined
by trolls and people who are not really engaging. They're just spewing.
I mean, if you give a lot of care and feeding, I mean, Fred Wilson's blog has magnificent comments because he gives a lot of care and feeding to them. He values them, and I respect that about him. Maybe I'm just more hateful than he is, and I get junky comments, but I just don't want to bother to some extent.
It is a lot of work. I'll give you an example, and I get hate mail every day about this, but we have, as you know, a very active chat room. There's 773 people in it right now. And in order to keep that chat room from descending into the eighth pit of hell, which every IRC chat, every forum does, we have a dozen moderators at all times.
I didn't know that. I never knew that.
We have Dan, Bear, Brass, right now, CWBP, Darth Emma, Hip, Legat, Life's a Zoo, Marmot, Mick, Night Flyer, Sly Ferret, Texan, TTK, and Warpoli. Those are all mods.
Thank you all, mods.
And I get email all the time from people saying, I was kicked out of your chat room. And what people don't understand is, the minor infraction that they were kicked out for, and often it is minor, multiplied by 1,000 becomes an unusable thing.
Yeah.
And so I do think that to create a community requires immense amount of care and feeding.
It does.
And, you know, John O'Bacon wrote a book on the art of community, which I think is a good start. But mostly I think the takeaway is you've got to participate heavily to keep that moderated and to keep that good.
I also think this post I'm writing that I'll put up in a day or so, that we also need new norms where we redefine what's rude.
Yeah.
Right? It's almost seen as where we carry over the old norm from old communication that says if you don't respond to somebody, that's rude. the new rude needs to be, if you send me something I didn't ask for and you expect me to respond immediately, that's rude. And I know you've admitted, I think in the past, Leo, that for certain kinds of communications, you're not going to touch it until you get sent two or three times.
Right.
Right? Because if you just kind of can't. If it's that important to you, then try two or three times. Okay, I'll pay attention. And I'll admit that I'm on certain kinds of communication, I'm like that too. And in the old days, that was rude. But now it's rude to give us noise.
Right.
So especially pitches for things, like, you know, requests for things, even among your friends. I mean, if someone, if PR people email me and I don't respond, it just means I'm not interested.
Right.
Or if a friend...
Stop bugging me.
Lately, even friends have learned that if they ask me to help them with their phone and I don't respond, it means I just don't know what to help you with, or, you know, whatever.
Lately, there has been a trend. I don't know if you've noticed this, Kevin, from PR people to send three or four follow-ups saying, I didn't see a response. I was wondering, did you want me to do that?
Just making sure you didn't miss your opportunity to meet with
No,
CEO
I'm ignoring you
XYZ
on purpose.
I'd be in New York next week. And, hey, I notice you're in New York.
You must get a mess of those before CES, Leo?
Yeah, I can't use my email for three or four months before CES, and then for three or four months after. So really, if you don't get an email from me, it's only you have to email me in the summer. That's the only time I can accept to read email. Oh, it's amazing.
You're like a Japanese samurai. You only venture out and you collect it all in the fall in grain form and bring it home.
I think your next book, Jeff, your sequel to Public Parts, has to be The Rude Society.
Well, I'm thinking about just that, Leo. I'm thinking about new norms. What occurred to me in the whole privacy debate is that we're trying to put old behaviors onto a new reality, and when it doesn't work, we go crazy, right? And so you can think of so many areas where that's true, but email and communication is a great one. But so much of the rest of society, I've been taking notes and notes and notes and notes, but what we're really doing is we're just adjusting our norms, and that's a process of negotiation that occurs. You know, what's it rude? Is it rude when you're standing and talking with someone to pull out your phone and read it?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Right? It depends on who it is. I wouldn't say it's rude.
There's a new meme I've been seeing on Twitter and on G+ for when power technorati gather. They do a stack of the phones. Everybody's supposed to take out their phone and put it in the middle of the table and leave the beeping and buzzing on. That's okay. And the first person to reach for his phone pays for the meal. Brilliant. Brilliant. And you're never going to get...
I don't understand the stacking thing, though. I mean...
Well, you don't have to stack it. It doesn't have to stack. They said you could stack it or you could put it on, you know...
And I like the idea, and I've started using it myself, just putting the phone out on the table as my own personal challenge. But I was always hoping it would be like a Jenga-like. I always thought it would be like a Jenga-like thing. Like, if your phone goes off and you can extract it from the pile,
oh,
and it doesn't
like
knock
Jenga.
The other phones, then, like, you can. But then it makes you really, really want to read that email.
Oh, that's good. I like that. Well, that's an additional rule we can add, the Jenga rule.
Yeah.
We put it in a stack this way. You do it. You have to do it like this. And then if you can get your phone out without knocking over
Leo,
the stack,
you'd have half the stack.
I'm already there. I've already got a Jenga stack.
It would penalize people with really thick cases, more so than Steve Jobs would even want them to be penalized.
That's true.
It'd
that's
great.
A good point, yeah.
Well, then you got the rubbery case you can't yank out.
Right.
There would start to be a market for slippery cases.
Great.
Yeah, the new Android phones are more slender, so you can pull them out.
That's right. That's right.
What's your kids' behavior versus yours, Leo?
My kids yell at me because I'm so bad that, you know, I stopped doing Foursquare. But when I was doing Foursquare, I would check the first thing I'd arrive anywhere, like a restaurant, we arrive en famille, and I have my phone out checking in, and it takes 30 seconds or a minute, and they yell at me. They do not like me to do that. But on the other hand, we were at dinner the other night, and my wife says to Henry, my 17-year-old, you know, we could see the glow of your phone. Holding it in your lap does not hide the fact that you are, in fact, texting right now.
It just means you eat at fewer French restaurants.
Yeah.
You end up eating at more, like, open-air restaurants.
Yeah.
On the side.
Kitty, squirrel. You know, it is – I remember vividly – texting wasn't very popular here in the States until a few years ago. I remember vividly about 5 years ago – sitting in a square, I can't remember if it was Italy or France, I think it was Italy, and watching people go by, and they were buried in their phones because texting took off earlier in Europe than it did here. And I thought, that is really weird. And now, of course, everywhere you go, people are buried in their phones. That's all that you see. everywhere. I don't know what to say about it. It's just the way it is. And I'm as bad as anybody.
Yeah. I mean, and I think we have to, you know, if we're going to be talking to Siri on the street, these are just cases where we're going to readjust. And to tell people you can't change your behavior just doesn't work. To tell them you can't change industries, to, you know, doesn't work. We are going through change and we're trying to figure out how to adapt to that.
And you're right.
What's rude?
This is what Tim O'Reilly also says, that it's not about laws, it's about norms.
Yes.
We need to pass norms.
Has he written about that?
I don't know. I saw him speak at a Foo Camp about it. And I can't remember. I think the context was probably, you know, SOPA or something like this. But right. his position was the government and laws are not the solution to these kinds of things. We've had norms for years. You know, a lock on a door doesn't really stop anybody. You can walk down the street in most neighborhoods at night and look through windows. There are laws against both, but really it's the norms that stop people from walking up to the window and going, what's going on in there, you know?
Right, right.
And norms are very effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I look back at the lies we told. Or the first lie was I didn't get your email because it was broken.
Yeah.
Right? So we didn't tell the truth. We had to find the white lie. The next one was it got caught in the spam filter. The spam filter's got that, right?
Yeah,
the next
dog
one right
ate
now,
your email, yeah.
Well, now it's you're not a priority in the inbox. And so we're not really adjusting the norms. We're just finding new lies. But the lies catch up with us as technology takes away the excuse. And so we got to have the courage to say no, or that doesn't matter to me, or you don't matter to me, or you're bothering me. Or, you know, how do we find the ways to express those things in a way that we still consider to be civil? Silence is one way, by the way. Yes.
Empathy toward other people being as buried as you are, I guess. Empathy toward other people who, you know, either maybe don't want to get email notifications every minute on the minute, who only check their Twitter twice a day, you know, that kind of thing.
You can do what Dana Boyd did. Dana has more than once now taken a complete email sabbatical for as long as
months.
So if you send her email, it will bounce back and say, I'm not going to read this. I'm not going to see it. You can't get me.
Right.
If you really need to find me, you can figure out who my mother is. And I needed to reach her recently for something. I won't reveal to the world and ruin it how I got to her.
Did you call her mom?
No, I actually did research. I thought it was actually a violation of privacy to figure out, you know, what's her mother's name and where they live. Does she live in Pennsylvania? You know, I thought, Jesus, that's worse. That's bringing your mother into this.
You know what's really bad? People now call my wife. They call my home number and to get a hold of me. And I told Jennifer, you're not my appointment secretary. You don't have to get you don't have to help them. Please don't. And I get angry at people. I say, don't call my home number. Why are you calling my home number?
Yeah.
It's radio stations and others who will, you know, have the home number because I sometimes do the thing from there or something. But that's terrible. I mean, people get very annoyed when you're not available.
Yep.
People go to the clerk of courts to find you. They really want to get a hold of you.
Yeah. It's so tempting just to disappear off the grid.
You couldn't bear that, could you?
No.
No.
That's really why this is a discussion, because we love it and we hate it at the same time.
Yes. Yes.
CES is going on right now. That's why we're doing the show on a Monday instead of a Wednesday. In fact, immediately after the show, I'm going to get on the plane and go to Vegas. Most of our team is down there. And Google is down there. They made a big deal about being down there. And they're down there in a lot of different ways. Of course, there's Android phones. There's Android tablets. In fact, we're starting to see a number of televisions. LG just announced a line of televisions running Honeycomb. Apparently, according to Charlie Osborne writing for ZDNet iGeneration blog, Google is paying vendors to put put Android in television sets. According to NeoWin, Google has struck deals with multiple suppliers to include Android in the TV set. Maybe this is what Eric Schmidt was talking about.
I think this starts we'll buy our way into TVs.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. There's revenue for them in their long run.
Yeah. I mean, how much would they pay, though, I'm wondering?
So this is these are TVs, like Lenovo's is running Android 4.0, which I assume is not Google TV as you and Gina know it, right, Leo?
Right.
Right. You have
Honey.
Yours is not technically an Android. It's a very particular framed version of.
Well, Android. It is Android, but yes, it's Google TV.
Yeah.
So, and in fact, that's part of the disappointment. I wish it were. I wish I had full access to the Android market. But the issue, I think, is that the Logitech Review, which is the one I use, doesn't have enough horsepower to run most of the. I mean, you can't put Angry Birds on it. It won't run. I would guess. I'm just guessing.
Right.
So I don't know what they're. It says Android in this article. Does that mean Google TV? Does that mean Android? I don't know. I mean.
So which is more powerful to have, Google TV or Android? I'm confused.
Well, it's not which is more powerful. I mean, Android has more choices because you'd have the Android marketplace.
Right. Marketplace, right.
Presumably Android means Android marketplace, means some Google apps. Google TV doesn't have, you know, Gmail on it. It doesn't have Android marketplace. Right. It does. It has a limited Android marketplace with just a few appropriate apps. And I think that, but that comes down to the fact that the processor in some of these devices is just not enough.
Well, that's also the other news is Marvel,
right?
Not the comic book company, announced a deal with Google and is showing a box at CES.
A reference box.
Yes.
So Marvel is a chip and a chipset that is used by a lot of embedded products, and by showing this Armada 1500 chip. They're basically telling people how to build it. Now, it's a 1.2 gigahertz chip, which means it's probably fast enough to do a lot of the applications that you'd want. The Lenovo product is Android with a Snapdragon, 1.5 gigahertz Snapdragon, means it probably could play Angry Birds.
Wow.
I really hope that's a reference design because it's an ugly-looking box.
It is.
Yes. It is.
Ugly
Marvel
box.
Doesn't make stuff.
No,
yeah,
no, they're just saying that you can, and they want, you know, it's without a fan, it's small, it's cheap,
yeah,
okay, low power. That's the point.
It, you know, it's basically looks like a Roku, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I don't know what Google is paying these vendors. I guess it could be as much as $5 or $10 a device. That would make it very attractive.
Well, it becomes really interesting. I just saw just now on Twitter that you can get the low-end Nook for free with a one-year subscription on it to the New York Times.
Wow. So the Times is giving away a Nook, basically.
Or
it's funny. We said this, well, somebody is. We said this would happen, that at some point the content creators would be giving away these devices as a reader.
Yep.
Why? It's got to save the New York Times a ton of money not to have to print it, right?
Yeah, and it's the future strategy, and it's the future revenue stream, and it's a way to get new customers they might not have gotten otherwise. You know, it's in the old days, but there's danger here, Will Robinson. It was when I worked at Time Inc., Sports Illustrated was famous for having the sneaker phone, and it was a sneaker, right? And people were buying subscription to get the phone, which is to say they weren't buying the magazine, they were buying the phone. And they had to take the damn magazine.
I want my football phone.
Yeah.
Which means that they cancel their subscription.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And Sports Illustrated was known to have a warehouse full of sneaker phones in some scandal of the circulation world at the time. So the premium business can be a dangerous one. Philadelphia newspaper has been giving away its own tablets with subscriptions, and it's not working very well. But that's, you know, who wants the Philadelphia paper? And for the organizations that try to do this and think that they can trap you just because you get the device, no, they probably can't. So there's some danger here, but it's still interesting that it does say that's the future and that's where we head.
So we did see the Lenovo TV last night. I think that they covered it when we did our live stream from the CES unveiled, but we'll go over to the Lenovo booth and
I'd be very curious
to take a look at it. Apparently, it's running Ice Cream Sandwich. It's a 55-inch TV. It's interesting because you've got computer manufacturers going into the TV business, and then you've got Vizio, a TV company, going into the computer business. That's really now we're really talking convergence. You know,
it says is who cares what the device is?
Right.
Everything's connected.
Right, it is clearly, yeah. I love
or
the idea.
It's both sides thinking the grass is greener.
Maybe. Or maybe that's it. I'd rather be in the TV. But the fact that Lenovo's making a TV really lends a little more credence to the idea of an Apple television.
Yeah,
Of course, Lenovo is a big Chinese conglomerate. They probably own TV manufacturing facilities, and they probably have a better end-to-end solution.
What do you think an Apple TV could be if you think like?
I am one of those people who just doesn't get it, who thinks Apple should not get in the TV business.
Ah.
Although, you know, this Lenovo TV might make me think twice. I just, you know, it doesn't, the TV is such a different business than the computer business.
It's an awful business. It's a terrible business.
That margins are terrible.
Change constant.
I have a friend, someone I know in Buffalo who works for iLounge, and the way he put it was that until Apple has a device that can, that controls the entire experience from turning on your TV, watching something, turning it off, and knowing that when you come back to your TV, everything you would have wanted to watch is available. He doesn't think Apple will do it until that is possible. And as you all know, and as previously say on the show, content companies aren't willing to be turned into pipes like that. So I don't think an Apple TV will exist until that is possible, until Apple can control the entire experience, you know, like it, as with an iPad, from start to finish, you know, on to off. And I'd be surprised if it was coming out in the next year.
I think you're right, Kevin.
I think we're all going to be surprised because I think it is going to come out next year.
Yeah.
But I just don't understand why. It just baffles me.
So that quote in the book, the quote in the
he says, "We've licked it." Yeah, I figured out the TV thing.
That could mean we've conceptually licked it. You know, like
doesn't mean it's a product, right?
Right. The idea for the iPhone existed sometime before the iPhone was available as a device. You know, supposedly that whole thing about the iPad, actually. Supposedly, they kind of delayed development on the iPad to do the iPhone.
Right.
And then the iPhone gave them their entree into the iPad market.
Right.
Once they figured out the phone, then they'd figured out, oh, we've also figured out the iPad. It could be that type of thing where we have the idea for what we want to do, but it's not in place yet.
Right.
I think that quote has a lot of mystery behind it.
We shall see. We shall see. We're going to take a little break. We are here. Kevin Purdy is here. The Purd Man. Kevin Purdy on Twitter and Google Plus. Freelance writer and expert on Android. Good to have you.
Thank you.
Gina in the White House right now. I think Gina, has she tweeted from the White House?
No, I looked.
No, not that I've seen.
It'd be so cool if she said, White House right now. They probably take your phone when you go in, right?
No, I don't think so.
No?
I don't think so. I remember there was a guy named Rex Hammack, who's a wonderful blogging guy who runs a custom publishing company in the South. And he got a meeting with George Bush as a typical small businessman. And he was tweeting. He was not tweeting. He was blogging. There was no Twitter at the time. But he was blogging from leaving the Oval Office. It was pretty cool.
Wow. We will watch carefully to see if she tweets from the Oval Office. I've just been asked to run as vice president. Anyway, we miss Gina, but Jeff Jarvis is here, the author of Public Parts and this professor of journalism at City University of New York, and a man who is really on the forefront of the new journalism. I like that. Every decade has its own new journalism.
well, you need it for a new century, you know.
Yeah, this is journalism for the new century, okay? We'll be back with more in just a bit. Lots to talk about, but first let's talk about backing it up. We've talked about the cloud all the time and the idea of, I think it's got to be very attractive, of taking the data that's on your systems and putting it in the cloud so that it can be safe, accessed, and restored at any time. But doing so is a little, you know, can be a little tricky. How do you do it? Do you set up an S3 account? That's why I love Carbonite. It really is a straightforward way to get cloud storage and cloud backup for everybody, Mac or PC. If you go to Carbonite.com, you can see what I mean. Try it free for 2 weeks. You don't need a credit card, just the offer code TWIG, TWIG. They have the base Carbonite account, perfect for a laptop, is everything on your internal drive for less than $5 a month, for $59 a year. In fact, if you use Twig, you'll get 14 months for the price of 12, so it's even more affordable. That backup happens whenever you're online. It's very carefully designed not to slow you down or your internet connection. So it trickles the data up as changes are made. It's always kept up to date. You can see that data at any time. You log on to your Carbonite account from any computer. You don't have to install anything. You just log on to your Carbonite account or on a smartphone. They've got apps for iOS and Android, or even and BlackBerry too, or on a tablet. And there's your stuff. So it's cloud storage. And should the worst happen, and by the way, disasters always happen. You lose the laptop, you destroy the hard drive, or most commonly, you accidentally, human error, throw out something you really needed. It's right there, always up to date, always available. It's the best way to back up. Automatic offsite backup for less than $5 a month. They do have plans for people who want to back up external drives or multiple computers. It's all there at Carbonite.com. And use the offer code TWIG for any of those, the home office, or the small business plans. And you can use Carbonite right now. They say back up, move forward. I like that. You got to back it up to get it back. Do it right with Carbonite. Carbonite.com. Use TWIG as the offer code. The easy way to do the cloud. Speaking of cloud, I think it's almost now, this is one of those buzzwords that even if you have no idea what you're doing, you've got to offer cloud services. Lenovo, Acer, everybody at CES, this is the cloudy CES, is announcing some form of cloud service.
So last year's trend was Android, right? This year is clouds?
I guess.
But who cares? Who wants a Lenovo cloud?
Well, you know, Dell's done this for a long time. Apple, of course, has iCloud now, and Microsoft has SkyDrive. Google, I think, probably does the best job of this. I don't know if people really know that you can upload any file to Google Docs. Do people know that?
Not generally, no.
Yeah. I'll give you an example. Somebody called the radio show and said, hey, I need a way to print my PDF, Acrobat's barfing on it. And the chat room said, well, just upload it to Google Docs and print it from there because they translate PDFs. So Acer is going to introduce Acer Cloud on all Acer PCs, instantly syncs data across your PCs, smartphones, and tablets. Lenovo's personal cloud will also sync data across PCs. I don't know if it'll go to the Lenovo TV. Oh, yes, it will. It'll go to their K91 smart TV. You can sync it to the cloud.
I can't imagine, though, the PC buyer who 2 years after they buy their, $400 Windows laptop says, well, I really want to upgrade to Mac, but all my stuff's Asus. Like, I can't think of a less loyal, product than PC laptops. I mean,
also, these guys are not software wizards. The software interfaces on these tools is always horrible. It's abysmal.
No. My poor mother's Dell desktop PC has the Dell cloud backup thing installed, and man, that is not great.
Not good.
I lack for words. It's not. It's very painful.
For years, I've always told my team when we go to cover CES, don't decide until you get there what the story is, because you might be surprised. And often there are, although lately there have been fewer and fewer surprises at CES. But this one surprises me. I did not think cloud would be a buzzword at CES this year. Tablets, yeah. Android, yeah. TVs, of course. But cloud. Cloud TV. Wow.
Here's some free marketing. Get Dropbox to sign up with Lenovo and say, hey, if you buy a Lenovo PC, you get 6 extra gigs free on Dropbox.
Yeah, why don't they do that?
That's smart.
Geeks crowd to your brand. I mean, find someone who's not device dependent and have them offer or Carbonite or someone, anyone. Just don't make your own island.
And Dropbox is such a good brand. Everybody knows it. I mean, it may not be the best cloud service. There's issues about encryption and so forth, but that doesn't, for most people, for your mom, it's just, just do it. Do it that way. Don't make a Lenovo cloud.
Part of this, I mean, you're right, Leo. It's just the hot thing at the moment.
It's me too.
There was I didn't put this up to the list, but a report from Wanted Analytics that reports on recruitment says that there are 10,000 new job ads posted online in the last 90 days looking for employees with cloud computing skills. What does that mean? That means that the person hiring doesn't know what the cloud is. So there was a 61% increase.
Cloud computing skills.
Yeah.
I've got mad cloud skills.
61% increase. Right. Hey, kid, use
Gmail.
I'm
connected to Wi-Fi all the time.
I've got mad cloud skills. Well, good. Now you know, kids, how to get a job. Yep. Wild. So I guess Tom Hanks decided he was watching how Louis C.K. was doing the thing, and he says, I got to get on that internet thing, too. He's going to do a web.
He didn't quite get on the internet. He got on a suburb of the internet.
Yeah, Yahoo it's called. Whoops.
Yeah.
Electric. Yeah, Tom, you should have called me. Electric yeah. City, an animated futuristic series he's been developing for years, will premiere on Yahoo this spring, according to Associated Press. 20 episodes, each 3 or 4 minutes long. This is another Me Too play, right? I got to have a web series.
Well, he's evidently been trying this for a long time, the story said. And it's an animated series about the post-apocalyptic better life, things he wants to say politically, which is great, which is fine. So he
tried
to
do it originally with puppets, it says here.
Yeah, it's called Electric City, and he originally tried to do it with puppets. So it sounds like it's like circa 1982. But
what was that? What was that horrible show? Alf.
Alf. Yeah.
And then there was Fraggle Rock. Remember that? Oy.
What were the ones going back? Oh God, it was a space one when we were kids, Leo, our age.
Oh yeah, Supercar and Thunderbirds. Thunderbirds are a go.
Scary.
Yeah, because they all walked like this. They were marionettes.
Yeah, wait, it was ridiculous.
No, we're talking.
I don't know if this. I don't know if this is a soft puppet or a marionette. I doubt it was a marionette. Although Team America, that's right, Team America.
You're treading on dangerous Generation Y nostalgia ground here, Leo.
Leo,
here's the problem. He doesn't know who Alf is.
Oh, come on. Kevin
I had an
Purdy.
Alf from Burger King. I had to send my mom to every Burger King in Central New York to get one.
See, Alf was aimed at him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alf was aimed at him. And then Fraggle Rock.
I might not
Rock,
have been able to discern the quality, but.
Fraggle Rock was for stoners, basically, right? I think it was. Because it was originally on Saturday Night Live, and it was like the weirdest, like the bubbling. It was the Muppets for stoners.
So Tom Hanks' show, though, does. It supposedly touches on some interesting ground about a like almost like a Morlock and upper level society where above ground everything's fine, everyone has great internet.
I like that.
And then underground, you know, there's all these issues with privacy and freedom of speech and stuff like that. But no one's seen a minute of it yet. So
there's this whole it's conventional wisdom that if you do a video on the web, it should be 4 minutes long, and if it's 10 minutes long, it's way too long. And I really wish that people would just do long form and stop.
Yeah.
It's television, kids. It's okay. Yep. You can make a half hour show, Tom. It doesn't have to be 4 minutes. It's not even worth starting a 4 minute show. And then I'll have a 30-second pre-roll. No.
Yep.
Felicia Day proved that with Dr. Horrible and The Guild. I mean, people love to watch that. And I like it too. And those are usually 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I think.
Well, our shows are 2 hours long, so I'm the wrong guy to ask. But I think that that's conventional wisdom that I don't think is actually true. And I think what you get when you do short attention span theater is you don't get the audience that you really want to sell to advertisers. It's one of the reasons that the YouTube audience, despite the millions of views, is very hard to monetize because these people it's short attention. I watch my kid watch YouTube. You probably know the same thing, Jeff. It's like Epic Mealtime. He's not going to buy anything advertised on that. There's no engagement there at all.
Yeah, and why is Google trying to get more long form on? They must know something.
Yeah. I got a big I am starting to get more and more concerned. Remember we did our year ender and I, you know, you asked me what should Google do, and it was completely off the top of my head. I said they should spin off or get rid of YouTube, and I'm starting to feel more and more that this is the case as I see you. Did you read the article in The New Yorker this week?
No, I didn't yet.
There is a article on streaming on YouTube's plans. They call it streaming. I don't think of it as – I think of the live stuff that we're doing as streaming.
Yeah.
It's not really – it's watching video on the web, not live. But they are really getting they hired this guy I don't know how he pronounces his last name, but they are getting very aggressive about this. And I just feel like Google, as we talked about last week, should not be in content.
No.
Kevin, what do you think about this?
So, I don't mind if YouTube is the channel for which when the Oscars are on, or let's say the Super Bowl or something like that, if they want to be the provider of you know, web video for events and things like that. I think that totally fits their mission.
Yeah, because they got the bandwidth to do it.
They have the bandwidth, but it also brings people into looking at Google as a place to go for information and events and what's being talked about. But I tend to agree that I don't think that original content creation is something that they should be trying to do. Whether they kind of accidentally do it is another matter. But
I'm not saying it's bad business for them. In fact, it probably is very good business for them. I'm just saying it's bad business for me because Google is as being the arbiter of what exists on the internet. They have way too much power, and so they shouldn't be making content. That's a conflict of interest because they're gonna. You know, I'm afeard that if it's not on YouTube, it doesn't exist, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, and when you subscribe to people's YouTube channels, which is currently kind of the method for monetizing YouTube, you know, which channels you see recommended to you, you know, if you like this, you might also like this.
Right.
That's treacherous too.
A lot of power.
Exactly.
Leo, how much viewership do you get for the network from YouTube?
Well, if YouTube doesn't yank the show because of putative copyright violations, it just varies show to show. Some of our shows get a significant portion of our downloads, you know, maybe 30%. Most of the shows, it's maybe 10% or less.
So let me guess, Magic gets more, Heavy Geek gets less?
iPad Today is a popular show. I think our Before You Buy show is going to be carefully cultivated for YouTube. There's 19,000 views on a show that we didn't even put out as a podcast yet. It was the rehearsal for our gaming show, which launches next week. And then we had a couple of million plus view shows as well. But we also have a very hard time monetizing it because you turn on that switch and then Google says, nah, but you got copyright violations and turns it back off. Right. So if you're not in the Google sphere, if you're not a Google partner and Google decides in arcane ways how to, you know, make you a partner, you really are second class on Google, very much so.
And that's the essence of your concern about them being the content business.
Yeah, I don't think they should be in the content business. John Seabrook's article is in this week's New Yorker. It's called Streaming Dreams. And it's the dream, and the dreamer is Google. It's Google and its views. Last week's Twig has 785 views. So it's not a big number for Twig. The Talking Head shows don't do that well. And it's talking with this guy, Robert. It's KYNCL. He's Czech, so it's probably Kinchel or Kinsel. Who is the architect of all of this new content on Google. Well worth reading. It's a very interesting article. It scared the hell out of me. Well, we tried to become partners with YouTube Live, and they told us, well, you can't. You have ads. We do the ads, buddy.
Yeah.
Hey, let's talk about Twitter. Last week, Rupert Murdoch tweeting. Now, Alec Baldwin is back, baby. I didn't even know he left.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, yeah. After the airplane, he left.
After the Words with Friends incident?
Yeah.
So now he's talking about politics, conversing with his yoga teacher girlfriend, and opining on Super Bowl picks, according to Laura Hertzfeld, writing at newsbriefs.ew. I guess that's Entertainment Weekly. Is that your old magazine, Entertainment Weekly? That's you, isn't it?
Yep. Long ago.
Jeff started that magazine.
Long ago. Did we talk about Howard Stern's drunk dialing last week?
No.
We didn't.
Howard, wait, is this on Twitter?
Yeah, it was on Twitter. So Howard on New Year's Eve, well, he actually told the full story on a show that he got a call. The quick story is he has something like Google Voice. So the message came in, Paul is calling. So he knew one Paul who was the new boss he's going to have at America's Got Talent. So he took the call.
Got to pay attention.
And he said, Paul, this is great. I'm really happy. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for you. Boy, can you believe all this publicity we're getting? And he gets kind of confused, silences on the other end. And finally, the conversation goes on, and he realizes this is not Paul, the British guy he's working with. It's Paul McCartney.
Oh, my God.
Calling to thank him for something nice he'd said.
Oh, my God.
Long and the short of it is he thought, you know, that just made my day. That was just the coolest damn thing to have
no
a Beatle.
No kidding.
Call. It was great. So he thought, who can I do that for? So he wanted to call one of his whack packers, Marianne from Brooklyn. And then his wife said, why don't you just drunk dial people? Go on Twitter. And so he went on Twitter and said, tell me your phone numbers. And by God, thousands and thousands went by. And Howard started calling people. He spent 3 hours on New Year's Eve.
Good on him.
It was really very cool.
Oh, my God, is that cool.
I DM'd him. I abused him on the air once to get him to follow me, so he follows me. I DM'd him my number, and then he said back on Twitter, "I can't. You're blocking callers who block their numbers." And I said, "No, I'm not. You're screwing up. It's not me." And in fact, I had. So I missed a call from Howard Stern.
He tried to call you.
Tried to call me, yeah. But it was very cool what he did. It was very, very, you know, he's kind of shrugging and saying, "Why do people think it's a big deal?" But it's him looking at the audience as a relationship, not just a product, and realizing that relationship. So it was cool.
So he actually tweeted, "Just tried the number again." A message says, "You do not wish callers who blocked their number." Jeff Jarvis always had problems with phones.
That's because I said he always had problems with phones.
Great speaking to so many of you. Amazing how great the conversations were. You know, my phone number, of course, has leaked out many times on the air here, and many people have my phone number. And every once in a while, in fact, it happened yesterday, I was getting in the shower, and a guy called and said, "Leo."
Forbidden visual, Leo. I don't want to know that. Yeah.
Well, it was a blocked call. Yeah, and actually, I do answer blocked calls because some very close family members have blocked calls. I wish they wouldn't. And so I have to answer blocked calls. So I answered the blocked call. I said, "Hey, just really love the show." And you can hear the shower. I'm sure you can hear the shower running in the background. And I'm kind of in a, normally I would actually say, "Thanks. It's nice to hear where you're calling from." But I said, you know, I was kind of brusque because I'm like, I'm standing here naked. So it kind of goes both ways.
That does.
And I don't mind. I use Google Voice. The number of people have is Google Voice. So I can see if it's somebody I want to talk to or not. And yeah. You know, most of the time people don't block their numbers. You're more likely to, you know, now I've given out the secret that if you block your number, I'm more likely to answer you.
You fool, Leo.
I'm such an idiot. Hey, if Howard can do it, I can do it.
Yeah.
And but I was responding to the tweet he said where I'm surprised actually these conversations are pleasant.
Yeah, no, he loved it. His fans were, because his fans can abuse him online, but these were all really nice people. He had a great time.
Well, secret, by the way. All of the trolling is anonymous.
Yes.
As soon as it's somebody and you're really face-to-face with them, people don't say mean things.
No. They were great. One guy said, a friend of mine is paraplegic. You would really make his day if you called him. And Howard did, and he got the mother. And the mother said, "You know, come on, you're screwing with my son here." And he had to convince her that, no, really, I'm Howard Stern. This friend said I should call. And he had a nice chat with him.
Now, Kanye West, on the other hand, has been tweeting completely incomprehensibly. This is going to be the newest journalistic meme explaining what the hell they're tweeting. MTV News actually did an article explaining what Kanye was talking about. a 91 message manifesto. Ye, who is currently in London, went off on a gang of topics, including his women's fashion. Oh, I guess they call Kanye Ye. Ye.
Yes. Ye.
I'm sorry. I'm so unhip. He went off on a gang of topics, including his women's fashion line, the Grammys, his design ideas for the MTV Video Music Awards, and his vision. He must have been high. Unorganized but informative, Yeezy put the string of tweets into context in his 39th posts, writing, "This is just a train of thought. But figure it's better to read than train thoughts." Somebody, I have to find this, it was on Google Plus, did illustrations of these tweets. I'm going to see if I can find this because it's very
far funny. Far be it from anyone to imply that Kanye lives inside his own head.
Oh, it's just stream of consciousness. I'm going to see if I can Google Kanye illustrated tweets. Yeah, illustrated by a 5-year-old.
I bet it didn't affect his follower count at all. I bet nobody.
Oh, people love it.
People probably thought it was the most interesting thing in there. He's like the horsey books of rappers right now.
Right. The teacher said I couldn't focus. I used to get kicked out of class for bringing dirty mags and drawing Nikes in fourth grade. There is a picture of him getting kicked out of class. I know this is not a very rapper thing to say, but I haven't bought a new car, a piece of jewelry in about 2 years. Dear Kanye, we miss you. The car store. The car store.
Me. It's where he believes cars come from. The car store.
I want to put creatives in a room together with like minds that are all way doper than me. You must be this dope to enter. I'm not dope enough. Oh, this is the one I like. My dreams keep me woke. Stay awake.
Yeah.
This is from The Buzz, which is a fun site about, you know, internet memes and stuff. You must be this dope to enter. Google. Instead of kicking kids out of school for using their iPhones, why not promote it? Allow kids to use search engines to do tests. Who had the Google search is who had the best video of all time? Okay, so now I've learned something. We call him Yee or Yeezy?
Yay.
Yay.
Yeah, so, I believe so.
I'm so not with it. So unhip.
Is our chat room any hipper, Leo? I don't know. What do they say?
Oh, they're much hipper. They're very hip. And, of course, then you have the government, the U.S. government saying, yeah, we can pull people off of Twitter. And we have Joe Lieberman saying, you ought to get off Twitter because you're Taliban, which is not, by the way, an illegal governmental, you know, it's not Al-Qaeda. It's not a terrorist organization. You may not like them. But
they just opened an office somewhere, I think.
Yeah, they just opened an office. So there you go.
Yeah, they did.
I bet they want somebody to work on the cloud.
They're going to open their own
cloud. They'll be hiring cloud-skilled people.
By the way, happy birthday, iPhone. 5 years old today. Apple announced the iPhone on this day in 2007. They didn't ship it till June. But I will never forget that speech. In fact, when Steve Jobs passed away, that was one of the speeches that was shown over and over again because it was one of his best keynotes. The one where he says, you know, what did he say? It's a phone.
It's an iPod.
iPod. It's an internet device. Phone, iPod, internet device. Phone. And then it turned out it was one device, the iPhone. I'll never forget that. I was sitting next to Scott Bourne, I remember, and he was like, he was squeeing the whole time. He couldn't. He was so excited.
I can't remember how much was known before the announcement. How much leaked before the announcement?
Scott thought it would be called iPhone. We everybody was pretty sure Apple was going to announce a phone, but we didn't know what it would look like. What do you think, Kevin? What do we know?
I remember I was working in a newspaper and I had to write like a next day story for it. And I don't think anyone was expecting the form that it came in, especially the one button thing.
No.
One button and then all touchscreen.
Although in hindsight, it's obvious, right? But always with Apple, of course. Because when you make something that is so, you know, so is the platonic ideal of something, then everybody goes, oh, well, of course it had to be that way. But at the time, we knew there would be a phone. We were pretty sure there would be a phone. There was no guarantee, but we were pretty sure there would be a phone. Scott Bourne.
But the phone before that, though, Apple had teamed up with Motorola to make this really cruddy, you know, Moto Rocker phone.
Horrible phone.
All it did was it kind of synced to iTunes if you hated yourself.
And you can only put 100 songs on it. It was horrible.
Yeah, and I remember looking at the museum. The museum, for those who don't know, they have a collection of all the front pages for any one particular day. I don't think you could find a front page in America that didn't have the iPhone reveal, at least like linked to inside the paper. Everyone was caught so off guard.
Huge.
By that phone.
Yeah. Huge story. Any other stories we want to cover before we get to our tip?
Let's see here. Was there something above?
Talk for a bit. I'm going to run and get something for my tip or my tool. I shall return. Talk amongst yourselves.
Oh, geez. How's the weather in Buffalo, Kevin?
Surprisingly warm, like global climate change inducingly fear warm. It snowed to the point where I had to scrape my car only twice this winter.
I kind of like that idea. The whole city is not miserable enough, and that makes them scared.
Well, you know, like I'm not one of those folks who believe that like climate change can be based on how warm it is or whatever, like this particular day. But man, like I haven't pulled out the snowblower at all this year. It's freaking me out. It's freaking a lot of people I know out. But it's odd.
So what else was I going to say here on the list?
Now would be a good time to plug your essay for Think Quarterly and explain what Think Quarterly is.
I could do that. Think Quarterly is Google's kind of like McKinsey Quarterly. They're kind of in-house thing. They send advertisers and such. And so they did an issue on speed, and they said, you want to do something for it? And I said, yeah. And I thought about it. I wanted to do a piece on something I've talked about here, the idea that the change is not happening as fast as we think, that it's actually very slow. It's only just begun. And
the
what does
change,
that mean?
You mean?
Wait, what the big change by the internet and technology and society and all that. We think it's this volcanic, huge lightning speed change upon us, and I think it's actually very slow. I think we've just begun.
Oh, that was an interesting article, wasn't it? I thought that was very interesting.
That was fun.
The speed.
Based on, I'm guessing, I'm just going to guess that if you look, it has a reference to Gutenberg somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Or Habermas.
In terms of how long it took Gutenberg to, you know, for his ideas to actually
It's a little recycled. I'll admit that, Kevin. Yeah, you call
See, Twig listeners, you get rewarded. You get some private insights here without even having to read stuff.
All right. Unfortunately, I packed the thing I was going to get, so I'll have to describe it when we get to our tool. But I'm bringing it to Vegas, so that's why.
Leo's magic box, people.
It's a magic thing. But let's start with you, Kevin, because you said that you, at the behest of Gina Trapani, prepared a tip for us. We have the Google Plus guy here. I mean, this is the king of using Google Plus. So I hope it's a Google Plus tip. No,
it's not. It's Android. I'm
okay.
So
no, you're also the king of Android. That's fine.
My Google Plus tip is somewhere on the internet. You might be able to find a guide to using Google Plus.
yes, and you should buy it now.
You should probably. It's in ebook form. So I have a device problem where I'm always wiping my devices. I'm rooting my Android, you know, 5 times a year, reinstalling operating systems on my laptops because I like to tweak things. And every time I go over to a friend's house, I have to ask them for their Wi-Fi password. And they give me this look that implies they've given me the Wi-Fi password for their house 8 or 9 times this year already.
Why do I have to keep doing this?
And even if you've taken your laptop to work, you know, the local Starbucks, your coffee shop, you know, you have the Wi-Fi password on your laptop, but not on your phone. And then you get there and you wish you had it and you can't remember it. So I found a really neat program recently in the Android market called Wi-Fi PC Sync. And that's Wi-Fi, all one word, PC Sync. Search for it. You might have to scroll down a little bit. I think the developer recently had to resubmit it or something, but I checked it out, and basically it takes all the Wi-Fi passwords off of your right now Windows. Hopefully,
smart
Mac. Takes all the Wi-Fi passwords off your Mac, or excuse me, off your Windows PC, encrypts them, which I had to check, and flings them over to your Android.
So you don't have to enter anything. I love it.
Nope. Every single Wi-Fi password on your Windows PC plugged over to your Android. And so therefore, whenever you go somewhere, you know, your phone hopefully will see the Wi-Fi network, detect it, and connect to it automatically. It makes me wish for like a service that was Dropbox-like and did this for all your devices.
Oh, there's a good idea.
Yeah.
Let's write that right now.
Yes, just got to pull out this Ruby book here. But no, obviously not. So if you have a Windows PC and you have an Android phone, this is a really great app that just, you know, will save you battery life, actually. Wi-Fi almost always does better on battery life than 3G or 4G. So Wi-Fi PC Sync in the Android market. Free. Grab it now.
Very cool.
Cool.
I wish they did it on the Mac, though, because all my passwords are on Macs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm gonna figure out how to write something like that. That actually would be a great little thing. You press a button, it goes to a encrypted folder on Dropbox, and then you could run it on your other devices.
Well, I like that. That's a good touch. That's a good touch.
You see what I'm saying?
So we can start up ideas.
I bet I could write that in 5 minutes. Where's
Jeff and Kevin, talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah, I'll be right back. Jeff Jarvis, your tip of the week.
Week is 4 billion. Piper Jaffray says Google's mobile ad business will hit $4 billion.
Wow.
This year. That, for perspective, is 9% of Google's total revenue of $40 billion. But it also, for perspective, equals Facebook's entire ad revenue. So just mobile. And I think that goes back to our earlier discussion on why would Google pay to get Android on TVs? Ta-da! They're going to make money, and it's worth it for them to seed it everywhere they possibly can and to win the TV OS before somebody else we know.
Do you think that they consider TV mobile?
I think Piper Jaffray might. I don't think Google does, but I think it's non-computer devices, non-laptop, non-desktop, I think is mobile. And mobile is, you know, meaningless, absolutely meaningless. Is a tablet mobile when most of its usage is inside the home? No, but it registers that way in these kinds of discussion.
Right.
The tablet's considered mobile. It's not. Mobile, I have long argued on this show, is a meaningless word. It means, you know, local, it means around me. It just means it is with me. And the TV is where I am right now. And so that, okay, I know where you are. You're in your living room. You're in your home. This is what you're thinking. This is the kind of advertising I can give you, as opposed to knowing this is a phone and that it's out somewhere.
Right.
So it's more signals generated, more revenue, more relevance, more revenue.
I have to say,
the division of Motorola that Google bought was called Motorola Mobility, and they make the set top box chips.
Right.
Exactly.
So,
right.
Even more useless.
A lot of people in the chat room are suggesting that I, instead of my pick, tell you about this, and I will. It's called No SOPA. It's a Chrome extension. It's getting a lot of press. You probably already heard about it. That when you visit a website like, let's say, the Motion Picture Association of America that supports SOPA, you'll get a big red bar on it that says, this company is a known supporter. Now, the only reason I'm not crazy about this is it's not always clear if this company is actively supporting SOPA now. SOPA, in fact, we talked about this on Twit, it's maybe a stalking horse for IP Protect, which is the Senate bill, which is more likely to get passed while everybody's paying attention to SOPA. There is an Android app that will also do this. You know, it's fun to just see. The reason I worry a little bit about it is because Ford is widely accused of being pro-SOPA. In fact, Ford is not pro-SOPA. I'm going to actually have dinner with Alan Mulally tomorrow and ask him to clarify that. But Scott Monty has tweeted and said that Ford never went on the air supporting said anything supporting SOPA. There was an older statement pre-SOPA even being a bill saying we do support public IP rights. But so this is where I worry a little bit about this bar is I don't know, you know, Ford is getting that red bar and I don't know where they're getting this information from. Right. In this case, it's kind of anecdotal. It is not, in fact, the case that Ford supports SOPA.
And it gets more complicated, too, because you're right. It's not just SOPA. It's Protect IP. And then there's the new Daryl Issa bill.
Exactly.
It is getting some support from some tech companies. But all that really reveals to me is that, once again, we're wrong to put the tech companies in the position of protecting the Internet. We want to protect the Internet from all those parties, government right. and companies.
Right.
And
the thing I was going to show you, and I wish I don't have it, and I don't – it was actually – I was looking for a clip. When I had the Nexus, you know, one of the things the Nexus does is time lapse. And I was doing a bunch of time lapses for my car, and I was looking for a way to mount the Google Nexus phone, the Samsung Nexus, Galaxy Nexus, into my car so that I could do time lapses out of the window. And the chat room suggested a fantastic – suction cup clip it was cheap. I bought it on Amazon, and in fact it's so good that even though I no longer have the Google Samsung Nexus, and so it means I no longer have ice cream sandwich, even on my my old Galaxy S2, I want to, when I do videos, because I'm gonna do some videos from CES, I'm bringing this clip to CES, and that's why it's in my bag, that it holds any phone very gently, very securely. And it's really fantastic. Do you remember, chat room? I'm going to have to ask you guys the name of it. I want to say the Exo Clip, but it's something like the Exo Clip, and now I can't find it.
Somebody says GoPro?
No. The GoPros are those great little cameras. But this is something that will hold your smartphone. It works very just as well with the iPhone as anything else, and it's fantastic. And
very specifically for Ice Cream Sandwich, Android 4.0, that does the time-lapse.
It's so cool. Well, it isn't.
Yeah.
It is the Exo Clip. All right. Well, I'm trying to find it online. Thank you. Chris is the guy who told me about it. And I highly recommend Exo Gear Exo Mount. That's it. Exo Gear Exo Mount. And it is fantastic for holding a phone. It's cheap. You can get it for $16, it's on Amazon for $20. That's where I bought it. And it really works really well for holding your phone. It's very cool. So it's just a little doodad, but there are a number of programs, heads up displays and so forth that you might want to have on your phone. And if you're using the Ice Cream Sandwich time lapse, it's really great for doing time lapses out of your window.
Oh, but don't watch videos, people. Don't watch videos.
Okay. I'm going to confess. I'm going to make a confession. I wasn't watching videos, but I did make a few Skype calls with the thing.
That's okay. Oh, Skype calls. Oh.
So I did a Skype call with Rick Salmon, who's a great photographer, and his video's there, and he can watch me. I'm driving along. We're talking, and he's clipped up there, and he's watching me. And the call went out, and he called me back. He said, did you have an accident? I had to call back to make sure that you were all right. It's pretty fun.
My problem is I'll be on calls in the car, and I being me, I will use words that one won't use on Twig. aimed at other drivers in the middle of the call. So suddenly I'm just in a normal sentence and I'll say,
I'd be afraid you'd actually switch from the front to the back camera and all of a sudden the other person would see like the road coming
how you're
them.
Driving. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
That's cool too. So this is, you know, it's a cheap little doohickey, but it's the first one I found that really makes it easy to put your phone in your windshield, and the clip just never comes off. It's really good.
Even on a dashboard, or does it have to be glass?
Well, it's got some sticky. It's better on, they say yes on the dashboard. I always put it on the glass. So if the dashboard's not too pebbled, it works. Yeah. It works. You can turn off the bad synthesizer music. They say it'll look at. They're holding a 26-pound microwave. No, come on. Yeah, it's a pretty good suction cup. Now I have to watch. I guess it'll work, or they wouldn't put it on
the
video.
I love to see they look around the office. What's heavy here? What can we lift?
Yeah, we got a microwave. It's not even locked. Look at that! It's lifting a 26-pound microwave. Can your car do that?
Right. Does it make a good just general smartphone dock, or is it only specifically for this like shooting purpose? You like?
No,
it?
You could. Basically, it's got these nice rubberized clips that will hold any shape like this. So I've used it both the iPhone and the Android phone. And the reason I'm bringing it to Vegas is because I'm going to put it on the table and do videos and stuff. It's like it's better than a tripod because how do you do a tripod on a phone? You don't. So you need a clip.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, it's fun. I'm just saying. I'm sorry it's in the car. Kevin Purdy's newest book. Of course, he wrote the Android book. The Complete Guide to Android?
The Complete Android Guide.
Yeah. Must have. And his newest is Google Plus, The Missing Manual, the book that should have come with the site. Just came out from O'Reilly. Get it right now. And I would have a copy in my hands, but I haven't got it yet. I do have a copy of this. It's Jeff Jarvis's book.
Thank you for the plug. I appreciate it.
Great book, Public Parts. And, of course, his previous book, which is also a must-read, What Would Google Do?
And I'm getting on a call shortly. Google's going to announce some stuff tomorrow related to Plus and search and things.
Yeah, they're treating CES seriously, I think. It's very interesting.
Yeah, sorry, Kevin. it's going the way of Wave, man. It's over.
No, I can update the ebook.
Yeah, there's some neat stuff coming. It's embargoed for tomorrow. Leo won't listen to embargoed stuff. I figure.
No,
what the
I
heck
don't.
I,
yeah,
so I will.
Yeah, so you listen to it, and then we'll talk about it next week. I guess I'll know because I'll be at CES. I'm actually about to get on the plane, and we will begin our. Well, we began our coverage last night, but our next CES. Live coverage is the Microsoft keynote, the very last Microsoft keynote. Microsoft's announced it will not be going back to CES after this year. Steve Ballmer will be speaking. And there are very strong rumors that Steve might be showing some unusually interesting things. Microsoft's keynote history is kind of checkered.
Yeah.
it's worse than checkered. They basically have never shown anything of interest. But apparently there's going to be a Kinect Pro. I've heard rumors there's going to be a Kinect Pro. They will have that new Nokia phone, which it's actually going to give Android and iPhone a run for the money. Yeah, this is nice.
Nokia 900/Ace, I think.
Yeah, the Ace is the key, is the code word, huh? Yeah, it's the 900. It's beautiful. I mean, I love the N9, and this is the N9 with Windows Phone 7, an actual operating system.
The New York Times wrote a slatheringly long piece about how wonderful Windows Phone is, and who would have guessed it?
It's better than you'd expect.
Yeah.
Well, the piece was like critics love it. Now what?
Right. Well, right now, one of the things apparently Microsoft's going to start doing, and this is according to Paul Thurrott of Windows Weekly, is offer spiffs, just as Google and Apple do to the salesmen and saleswomen in the phone stores to sell Windows Phone. Because you go into an AT&T store, it's very hard to get them to sell you a Windows Phone. They'll steer you towards an iPhone or an Android phone first because they make $25.
Yeah.
So Microsoft's announced, we're going to do this. So, so exciting. So we'll start that coverage of the keynote, and Paul and Mary Jo will be commenting in the background at 6:30 Pacific, 9:30 Eastern tonight. Right after that, we go to the Digital Experience event, another one of those ballroom events where lots of vendors show up, and Tom Merritt and Sarah Lane will be hosting there tonight. I'll pop in as soon as I get off the plane. I'm going to go right over there. Because they have a chocolate fountain. And I just want to bathe my head in it. Thank you so much, Jeff. Thank you, Kevin, for filling in for Gina, filling in so ably.
Good to see you, Kevin.
Thank you all for being here. We We'll be back next Wednesday at our regular time, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern on twit.tv. Don't miss a show. Subscribe on iTunes or on your Android phone. Google Listen is good. What do you recommend for podcasts on Android, Kevin?
I like Listen.
Listen's okay.
Yeah. I guess I'm not a power podcast listener, even though I'm occasionally on them. But, yeah, I like Listen. Some folks like Acast, A-C-A-S-T.
Okay.
Those are the ones I often hear recommended.
I'm looking for a good podcatcher on Android. Dog Catcher. That's a good one, actually. I know people like Dog Catcher.
Yes, that one, too. Yeah, definitely. I've gotten emails about that.
Yeah. Anyway, if you subscribe, you won't miss an episode. We have audio and video available of every episode. Just subscribe to Twig. Thank you all for being here, and we'll see you next week on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.